Hello and welcome to episode 9 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new and developing within our profession. Hello, my name's Craig Smith from the Big Picture People. Thanks for listening to the show. Hope you've been able to listen to the previous 8 episodes. If you haven't, you can catch up with them at our website, which is engagingic.com, or via iTunes and other podcast platforms. Next week, we've got a great interview coming up with Hannah Shepherd, who is from Virgin Media. Hannah's going to be telling us all about how they've brought purpose to life in their business. And purpose is something that we've talked about in previous episodes, and I think is going to be a recurring theme throughout this first series of Engaging Internal Comms. If you've not already done so as well, have a look at our website, engagingic.com, where you can sign up to our mailing list and get pre-show information about what's coming up next week. And we'll also let you know every week when the episodes are coming out, just in case you forget. And also on the website, you can leave us some feedback and you can join you can get a link also to our Facebook group, which is just for listeners only and is a private Facebook group. So anyway, that's enough of that. On to today's interview. So today's interview, we're going to be looking at how you can use data to better create an employee engagement experience. And particularly, we're going to be looking at how the culture of the organization shapes how we use that data and how a scientific approach can create a great employee experience. We're also going to be talking about how in a post-pandemic world, which is kind of contemporary to where we are at the moment, how we need to review and really use this as an opportunity in order to be able to create a great employee experience and the role that data plays in that. So I hope you enjoy the interview. Okay, so today's interview is with Ryan Tamasebi from Hive, and we're going to be talking about how the future of employee engagement is going to look after the pandemic of 2020. Ryan is Director of People Science at Hive, and he's been in that role since 2018. And he's formerly had roles in leadership development, Head of Leadership Development at Newcastle Building Society, and he's a trained business psychologist. So hello, Ryan, how are you?
Hi, Craig. Not too bad. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Well, thank you for joining us. So you're in the Northeast. Whereabouts are you, in Newcastle, or whereabouts are you?
In Newcastle. Currently into, I think, week 13 of working from home at the moment, which is not too far from Newcastle City Centre. But yeah, born and bred in the Northeast.
Fantastic. Excellent. So you're at Hive. I mean, I know a lot about Hive, fantastic business, but for those people who are listening who don't know anything about Hive, tell us all about what the business does and the work that you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're right. I joined Hive just towards the end of 2017, but the very end of 2017. And over the last 2.5 years, it's really been about working with organizations to help them understand the role that data and people analytics can play in terms of driving and shaping a better employee experience, creating better days at work for people, making sure that we create workplaces that are more fulfilling and engaging. So there's lots of technology out there, such as Hive, which can give organizations the opportunity to collect data whenever they need it, really, and as often as they need it from their employees. But as a business psychologist, I work more closely with our customers to help them understand, you know, what their cultural aspirations are, and doing some of that strategic thinking around how to use data to understand where they are now, and how to kind of measure and monitor and drive that kind of progress along the way until they do embed the kind of culture that they believe is the right one for their business. So it's a lot about helping them understand what to ask, when to ask it, but most importantly, how to turn that data into tangible action.
Excellent. Okay. And I think it'd be good at some point if we I know that's very much the kind of overarching purpose and mission of the organization, and some of the tools that you use. Hopefully, we'll talk about some of those. But your role as Director of People Science, again, that might be a term that people aren't familiar with. Tell us all about what a Director of People Science does. What is People Science all about in the context of the work that you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's really about getting to the heart of what drives people to enjoy what they do. And it's in its simplest form for me in this particular role. It's about really understanding what a good employee experience looks like and to understand how we can look at data more objectively and more scientifically to help us make better-based, better data-driven decisions. when it comes to our people and business strategies. So even an example of that is how we look at engagement data, and moving away from traditional views of cutting up employee engagement data and looking at it in a far more objective and scientific way, to really uncover the truth and the true perception of how our people are experiencing work. And then going beyond that, it would be looking at the way in which we segment our workforce as well, and moving away from traditional demographics such as gender and age and length of service to look more at those different personalities and mindsets as well, which we know are really important in terms of determining kind of those individual motivations and drivers and wants and needs from someone from their employer and from their work experience. Interestingly, the world that we're in at the moment, one that's, we're in the midst of a global pandemic, that is actually starting to influence organizations to start doing exactly that and starting to think about the individuals that they have in their workforce rather than thinking of them as an age, millennials versus Gen Y or long tenure versus short tenure males versus females, and actually having a look and thinking, well, actually, what does the return to work, what does the future of work need to look like for someone who is a single parent that lives an hour away from the office versus someone who might be exactly the same age and gender and length of tenure, but actually lives alone and lives 5 minutes away from the office and has a car to drive, and all of a sudden how they plan the work experience for those two different individuals looks vastly different. So we are starting to see an opportunity to start personalizing the work experience, and that is one kind of benefit that has come from this crisis has been that it started to encourage employers to think about this in a much more effective way.
Okay, I'll definitely want to come back to that, because I think it's really interesting in terms of the implications for how granular you can get in terms of being able to shape that individual employee experience. So obviously, I think that's a really interesting area. Just before we do that, though, you mentioned a couple of times, or we referenced in that, and you were talking there about people science, the kind of traditional way that people science, if it was called that traditionally, the traditional way of running and I've been part of this in my corporate career, they are the annual or the biannual big set piece survey where we gather that data. I mean, I think it'd be interesting just for people who are listening in, and many of whom will probably still have a survey like that. And I know we're not just talking about surveys here, we're talking about something much more holistic. But how does the work that you do differ from that maybe very traditional way of measuring employee engagement data and utilizing that in order to make a difference in the business?
Sure. Well, I think, really crudely, we're having conversations today, this conversation, but conversations that businesses are still having around employee engagement. We're having them because our workforces are still not engaged. The UK is still full of disengaged employees. The world is still full of disengaged employees. And there are significantly more disengaged workers than there are engaged workers. So for all we've researched it, for all we've surveyed our people, for all we've looked at employee engagement initiatives and projects, and we've continued to measure engagement over the years to see what impact we've had, we are still in a place where we have such high levels of disengagement. So even in that sense, that tells you that we've not been getting it right and we need to look at it differently. Where I see the real change coming from is not in terms of how frequently we collect the data and how many surveys we run, and how quickly we get the data back in our hands to be able to analyze it and interpret it and ask ourselves, so what is this telling us? The real change will come from changing and influencing mindset and behavior across not just leaders and managers, but all individuals, in terms of really raising awareness and that understanding of what a good employee experience looks like and what it means within individual roles and within whole businesses, and understanding what level of responsibility you have as an employee, as a manager, as a senior leader, in terms of making that a reality and driving positive change. The behavior and the mindset is the key to this, not the frequency or the speed at which we're collecting data. The data and the technology can help us, and it can be a catalyst for the change, but it's not going to be the change in itself. So that's where I see us really kind of changing and moving away from more traditional methods. And in terms of, one quick example, we started working with an organization towards the end of 2018 that had seen engagement increase by 10 percentage points over the previous 8 or 9 years of running the same annual survey. However, it had kind of gone up gradually over the first 5 or 6 years and then started to plateau. And it was a relatively high engagement score in terms of what they were reporting, and it was comparing favorably against an external benchmark that they were using. But at the point of coming in and engaging with us at Hive, they also reported that their labor turnover had been increasing over the last 5 years. And with Brexit on the horizon at that particular moment in time, you know, they were in a world where they needed to keep people in critical roles that were quite hard to fill because they were contracted hours, national living wage. The majority of the roles were filled by EU and non-EU workers.
Yeah.
So they had a real challenge, and their real challenge that they were trying to solve was not one of giving more good days at work for people. They were really focused on how could they create a working environment that made people want to stay. Mm. And so that was the challenge that they were trying to solve. And the way in which they were currently approaching it by measuring engagement through the annual survey and just repeating that year on year, it wasn't giving them the level of insight they needed to really understand what was driving turnover. And therefore, they weren't really able to solve the real business issues that they had. So that's why we need to start really asking ourselves, what are the challenges we're trying to solve? You know, what kind of experience is it we want to create for our people? And understanding that when we get that right, people will be engaged as a result of it. So let's focus on the input. Let's focus on the experiences we're trying to create. Start linking the data that we're collecting more effectively to, you know, the bottom line, the people and performance metrics that we're collecting, and use that to, you know, really drive a different way of thinking and a different approach to this.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting because I think superficially sometimes, and I've fallen foul of this, is, you know, when I talk about your business, is sometimes sort of thinking around it as being, you know, it's about the tools and it's about the technology and it's about the app. But actually what you're saying there is it's not. It's about the way that you connect everything together. It's about really sort of thinking about that. And I guess what the app then gives you is that much more dynamic way of measuring that than the sort of, you know, the huge lag that you get between these sort of big set piece surveys. And you can be much more nimble around the way you gather that data.
Yeah, absolutely. But as I mentioned, the speed is only one part of the puzzle, really. But yeah, absolutely. The opportunity to increase response rates and participation by making the tool more accessible by email and by phone and, you know, yes, by app and things like that, and being able to make it, you know, accessible to anyone, whether you're working on a factory floor or whether you're working behind a computer all day. And, you know, but the other part of it is about really working with an organization, as I mentioned, to understand what their cultural aspirations are. So you can start to have conversations with them around whether they're asking the right questions. And is the data that they're getting really the data that they need to give them that insight that they need to make better people decisions?
Yeah.
So again, making sure that you're crafting surveys that really give you the insight you need and not necessarily asking everybody exactly the same questions. And tailoring different question sets to different workers in different roles so that the questions you're asking them feel very relevant and pertinent to what's happening in their particular part of the business or within their particular roles at the moment. So already, you know, we're recording this at the time we're in the middle of COVID, the COVID crisis. We're seeing average response rates to surveys at the moment going up by 15% on average.
Yeah.
And that's a big increase. And the reason that that's happening is because we're asking questions about how people have been impacted, how people are feeling in terms of whether they're continuing to work on the front line or whether they're in remote working roles, and also questions about what they want the future of work to look like. And so it matters to people. You know, we've all been personally and professionally impacted by this. So it's something which we want to provide feedback on. We want to have a say around. So lots of surveys that are going out at the moment that are giving people, their employees, a voice. They're seeing really high levels of participation. And we've also seen about 170% increase on people leaving suggestions, which is almost like a digital open door where people can leave a comment or a question or an idea around how they feel the organization could improve. So that kind of like constructive solutions-focused approach, people are really engaging with that, again, because it really matters to them. It's something which they feel that, you know, if they can influence and they can have some control over, you know, it's really going to benefit both themselves in their individual roles and their teams and the business in the long run. So that just goes to show the importance of moving away from quite a prescriptive set of questions, which don't really get to the heart of what's actually happening in inside your specific business.
Yeah. I think there's a huge lag between the time those things are created and then they're answered. And then when there's time to, you know, you've gathered all the data and you got to respond to them. It's often there's a huge, you know, it's like looking in the rearview mirror to drive your car, isn't it? It's very sort of backward orientated. I just want to move on though, because I think what you've sort of led us nicely into there. And again, it ties back to what you were saying earlier, is this very different landscape that we're going to be likely to be going into. Whereas, you know, before we would group people together or groups of people in certain demographics, you know, used a couple of examples of a single parent. We're now looking at a much more tailored, bespoke experience. And I think, for, you know, just thinking about that from my days of working in large organizations where there's maybe sort of, you know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 people, perhaps. How practically are organizations going to do that? How can they get down to that level of you know, this feels, and again, it's maybe linking into, I know we were talking about the job crafting element that we'd already spoken about before the interview and the interview that we've had with Rob on that. But I guess, you know, there's more to it than just that. Well, how can organizations start to really create that unique bespoke experience for employees?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, first of all, there are always going to be things which, from a strategic point of view, the organization considers as being kind of absolutely key to the employee experience they want to create. So you don't want to have, you know, we know the importance and the impact of subcultures. And of course, you're always going to have subcultures within particular teams or departments that are working on very different things, particularly in those organizations, the size and scale of which you're talking about. But you still want to have those kind of consistencies at the organizational level of fundamentally what it should feel like to work for that organization. So there are going to be those elements of the employee experience that you want to get some feedback around and get perceptions from your employees. Yes, understanding engagement, but also understanding things around well-being and things around kind of career development and progression opportunities that are really important, leadership, management, communication, but actually really understanding, doing more to understand and explore within particular roles and particular parts of the business and some of those subcultures, what are those kind of nuances and what are some of the opportunities to flex and tailor things a little bit more, to focus more on those particular parts of the business and understanding what it is that they want and need from work. Because, you know, for example, if you ask a factory worker if they've got control and autonomy in their role, they're probably going to say no. And if you use the old HSE kind of stress management indicator, that would flag up as red because people are saying no to it. But if you ask a factory worker, do they want control and autonomy in their role? Quite often they say no. And that actually what they want is real kind of clarity and a routine around what they need to do and when they need to do it. And they're more that kind of get in, get out type of worker, where the control and autonomy and that kind of opportunity to be creative is not really something which drives them. And it's more about enablement. So again, it's just being able to tailor your approach a little bit more so that if you're doing kind of surveys within that particular demographic of the example I used, you're focusing it a little bit more on the enablement aspect and the things which are going to really matter more to that individual. So it doesn't need to be that you've got 100, 200 different surveys going out or 200 different kind of people strategies based on all the different people in your organization. But it is just doing a little bit more to kind of flex it and make sure that what you're doing actually works for the different people that you've got inside your business. And just doing a little bit more to, as I said, kind of personalize that feedback approach for them so that you're asking questions that when people read it, they don't just think, well, you know, this is like, you know, this is just for the business. The business just wants to know how engaged I am. The business just wants to get an idea of how productive I am. You know, we need to give people an opportunity to provide feedback on the things that really matter to them.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like that, actually. I mean, I have worked in those sorts of environments, factory environments, and I've seen inordinate amounts of energy wasted on trying to give people control who have clearly chosen to that particular line of work because they don't particularly want to, you know, they don't necessarily, you know, this doesn't come across the wrong way. They don't want to really have to think too much. They're there to do a specific role, a specific task, in a way that you know, the organization wants them to. So, but I think recognizing though there are different, there is another, still a way of engaging them and giving them a way to sort of feel engaged is really important. And that, you know, isn't that what we, and I think the danger is that managers often transfer what engages them onto other people and assume that everybody's engaged by the same things, and recognizing that isn't the case and being smart about the way that you do that, I think is really, really, I like that. That sort of really resonates with me from my experience. Is that an fair assumption? Is that a kind of a fair assessment of what you just said there?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we've talked a little bit about this again, going back to this sort of post-COVID world. What other things that you see as being real key things that organizations need to be starting to really think about in terms of engagement and getting the best out of their people, after everything's been sort of turned on its head?
Well, that's a really interesting one. I think, you know, as you mentioned, the managers have got a really, you know, we've talked for years about the importance of managers in terms of driving engagement within their teams and having better conversations with their people around how they're feeling and, you know, around employee engagement, having better conversations off the back of engagement surveys in terms of taking that data without within their teams and trying to turn it into action. Now we're asking them to do all of those same things, but to manage their team remotely. Mm. Manage a far more dispersed workforce. So, of course, there are going to be some challenges there. Interestingly, what we're finding is that with some of the surveys that organizations are running during this crisis, that we're seeing scores improve in terms of not only the manager relationship and how much a manager is checking in with individuals within their team, but also collaboration, not just within teams, but across different teams and departments as well. And historically, that's, you know, for listeners who've been involved in running engagement surveys previously, I would probably imagine that a large number of them will have experienced lower scores or more negative scores on their survey coming from questions around yes pay, which when you ask that question, you, of course, people usually respond with some lower scores to it. I always wonder why we ask those questions in the first place.
I know. Because
it's usually not going to lead to us doing anything about it. But anyway, the other one that we tend to see low scores around is how well people feel their team collaborates with other teams and other departments. So usually high scores when you're asking about collaboration within your team, but as soon as you start asking about across teams or across departments, you see much lower scores. We're actually seeing huge increases in scores on collaboration as a whole, not just within a team, since this pandemic happened. And whether that's because of the camaraderie of let's all get through this together, or whether it's because remote working is actually giving people more of an impetus or more of a drive or more of an opportunity to just interact and collaborate with other teams and departments. I don't know, but we're seeing a mix of all of those things because we're certainly seeing people feel like collaboration has improved. But I think to really pick up on it and answer your question, Craig, I think organizations need to understand how big an impact they'll be having on long-term engagement with the work that they're doing in response to this pandemic, and specifically how much of an opportunity they are giving their employees to feedback during this particular pandemic. Because obviously the initial response to a crisis can often be one of kind of top-down autocratic leaders saying, this is what we need to do. And, you know, it's very much kind of communicating that and saying, this is the way it needs to be. And for all, I think the more in which we can get input from our employees from the very beginning, and knowing that the impact that can have, I do understand the kind of the human nature, the psychology of crisis management, and actually looking to your leaders to be the ones to kind of guide the ship, or, you know, the ones to make those big decisions and kind of prove their worth in that particular scenario. But now that they've done that and we are coming through to the kind of the next phase, which is more about return to work, what the future looks like, we need to give our employees the opportunity to feedback on firstly how this has impacted them and how they're feeling at the moment from a well-being perspective, but also give them the opportunity to put forward suggestions and ideas for how to make this work in the long term, how to get the best of them working remotely, how much they want to work remotely, you know, what the return to work would need to look like in terms of office setup and the way in which it, everything will work once they do go back into the workplace, and just generally putting forward suggestions and ideas for improvements to efficiency and just, you know, making work more effective and more productive for everybody in this new world, whatever it looks like. And for those organizations that are doing that, they are going to have employees who feel far more proud and far more engaged with their employer, and actually seeing their employer as being one which was truly people first in terms of how they've responded to this crisis. And I think for those organizations that have kind of quickly put their employee feedback approach to one side as they've handled this pandemic, I think they're really going to see and struggle a lot with engagement and potential high levels of turnover once the kind of the job market and the economy starts to recover a little bit. And we've you know, we've seen the data to back that up. You know, employees are going to make have stronger perceptions and make bigger judgments about the integrity of their employer now than ever before. And what we're seeing is for those organizations that are continuing to have two-way communication and feedback with their employees, we're seeing huge increases to levels of advocacy and employee net promoter score. Huge. I mean, you're talking about an average 25-point increase in levels of advocacy for organizations that are continuing to survey and get feedback from their workforce during this time. And even when, you know, in case anyone's wondering, well, are those organizations that are surveying, you know, at the moment only those that are performing well commercially and doing okay commercially out of this? Absolutely not. I mean, we're seeing some of our customers who've had to make huge numbers of redundancies, or customers who've had to introduce a 25% pay cut right across their entire workforce, as well as furloughing large number of their employees. We're seeing them achieving kind of and seeing huge numbers of percent in terms of favorable responses to survey questions around, do employees understand why the decisions that have been made and why they've been made, how proud they feel of the way the organization has responded to the pandemic. We're still seeing those in high 80s and 90s in terms of favorable responses. So let's not pretend that, you know, we're all adults. So let's not pretend that we can't share bad news and still have a positive outcome. As long as we communicate with empathy and with honesty and transparency, people are more than aware of the potential struggles and difficulties and sacrifices that we're all going to have to make as a result of this pandemic. But as long as we do it in an adult way and make people feel included and informed, and we communicate with them in the right way, there's absolutely no reason why any bad news or any potential negative impact from this should have any kind of negative impact on how an employee kind of perceives their organization or how strong an advocate they are of it. We're seeing the exact opposite with the organizations we're working with.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think it's really important. I mean, you've made some really good points there. I mean, I think that last one really for me is the heart of what I perceive anyway, the way I define psychological safety, which is this, and you know, don't wrap me up in cotton wool. Don't try and tell me the world's brilliant when I know I can, you know, I see the news every night, but make me feel safe, make me feel valued, make me feel trusted, you know, be authentic with me. And treat me like an adult and don't try and sort of, you know, pull the wool over my eyes. And I think organizations, I totally agree. I've seen organizations that have done that really well. I've seen, you know, initially, I think there was a lot of sort of rabbit in the headlights and how much do we tell them? And I think the organizations that have worked that out, that actually, you know, burying your head in the sand and, you know, and sort of, you know, treating people like kids just doesn't really wash at the end of the day because they're smart enough to work it out for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you have to be very naive to think that, you know, we can look at the news and hear from, you know, the government and see what happened with, you know, the Dominic Cummings incident, and to hear, you know, the daily briefings, which often still leave us with so much ambiguity. And then you're seeing what's happening in America at the moment, and, you know, seeing what's happening with the protests in the UK as a result of it. And, you know, we're seeing all of these things in the media and wondering, you know, how things got to be just quite as kind of as bad as they can be coming across and being portrayed at the moment. And you'd have to be naive to think that people can see that and hear that on a daily basis, but not be prepared enough to get some bad news or hear some bad news about how the business they work for is actually being impacted. You know, we're more than used to hearing bad news and seeing bad news on the media at the moment. And actually what people want is a bit of clarity, but also to feel in control. And, you know, to talk from a personal well-being perspective, you know, I've really struggled with some of the things I've seen in the media around what's happening in America. And some of the institutional racism, which, you know, we absolutely need to try and change as a society. And you know, there's a challenge on all of us to be better. But I can certainly say that what really I struggle with from that perspective is feeling very unable to control or influence it as much as I would like to. So you can already feel there that where you feel like you have more control or you have more of an opportunity to influence and see the result of that, then the better feeling it gives you. And so when you're talking about work and something which is such a key part of everybody's life, to give people that feeling that they can at least have some feedback or have their say and express their concerns, ask questions, get some information from their employer as to what's happening, even if that answer is we don't know or we still have a lot of uncertainty. Just being able to have those conversations gives people the sense of control, or more of a sense of control, that they absolutely need at this particular moment in time. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a survey, but just make sure we're having conversations with people and giving them the opportunity to ask questions and express how they're feeling. And as leaders, we need to absolutely be able to express our vulnerability and, you know, talk to our people and you know, help them to understand that we're feeling a lot of that anxiety and uncertainty too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've always been a strong advocate for telling people as much as you know, and it will be, you know, outside of the realms of anything that's commercially confidential or would be potentially legal to give them that information. You know, if it's kind of some sort of takeover situation, but you know, I always use the principle I was taught. I learned by experience of watching other people do it, that if you tell people everything you know, okay, you always run the risk of them kind of, you know, rumor mill running amok. But from my experience, it will run amok much more if you won't tell them anything, you know, because it's just counterintuitive. Just a sort of final area I'd like to just talk to you about, and it just kind of links to what we've just been talking about. And you've indicated that the organizations, you know, not all of the organizations you're working with or investing at the minute are necessarily in a favorable position. And I guess it's a worry for our business as well, and you know, not a worry, but it's obviously a consideration, a risk factor. If we do, and I don't want to kind of preempt it and be negative, but if we do tip into recession, which seems to, you know, even maybe in the short term, quite likely, do you see engagement as being something that could potentially be seen as discretionary and therefore quite, you know, from our perspective, I'm sure we would see that as a negative thing? Or do you see it as something that organizations will continue to invest in because they now realized it as a priority? I guess it's like a bit of a loaded question, but I'd just be interested to know what your thoughts on that, or if we do end up in a sort of a recessionary position, albeit temporary perhaps.
Yeah, I agree with you in that. I think that's where we're heading. I think it's inevitable. And, you know, well, I wouldn't go into kind of a political view or a political stance on how we've approached it, but it certainly seems like a lot of what we've done has been kind of good at, or it's been helpful in terms of kind of kicking that can down the road when it comes to having an increase in unemployment and things like that. It seems like that's inevitable. An inevitable direction. In terms of your question about where engagement plays a part, even pre-crisis, I've always wondered why there's such a focus on engagement in the sense of let's measure and get an engagement score and let's understand, you know, what our response rate is to a survey and what our overall engagement score is to a survey. And, you know, we'll ask people how willing they are to go above and beyond what's required of them and things like that. And what can we do to get more out of people and get more for less? Well, for me, it feels like you're jumping straight to the output there, and that actually, if we just focus on creating really great environments which are full of kind of vibrancy and a sense of really good social health and social connectedness, strong sense of purpose, real kind of clarity of, you know, what people are working on and how they're helping to drive the organization forward, particularly if we're talking about recovery and helping an organization to get back on track in terms of its growth and its ambitions. Some of the job crafting stuff where we're talking about how we can shape people's roles so that they're doing more of the stuff that they're great at and they're able to apply more of their strengths. You know, how do we kind of create the managers and the leaders of the future, ones that are high empathy, high compassion, you know, all about bringing out the best in other people? If we focus on those things, believe me, people will be engaged as a result of it. And you can trust that people will be engaged as a result of it. People will be better performers as a result of it. Let's focus on the input. Let's focus on shaping a better employee experience, stronger organizational cultures, and know that when you do that, and you enable people to be able to perform and thrive and use their skills and collaborate with other people, that the engagement will come as a result of that. You know, engagement is always a byproduct of people feeling positive and having a strong sense of purpose and being able to apply themselves to best effect and utilize their skills, you know, and having opportunities to learn and grow.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the focus for organizations as they come out of this needs to be on looking at kind of revisiting, you know, the business strategy, the people strategy, and really looking at culture as being a true opportunity for them to recover. Get that culture right, create a really kind of strong culture, one where everyone's in it together and everyone's pulling in the right direction. And I think organizations will quickly be able to kind of get back on track, recover, and then hopefully we'll be able to see the job market start to flourish again as well as a result, as well as, yeah, of course, engagement levels generally across the UK.
Yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, maybe we'll get you back on the show in 6 to 12 months' time, and we can kind of compare notes and see what we've seen and see whether that's actually, you know, that opportunity has been taken. And going back to what you were saying earlier, whether organizations really do grasp the opportunity to reinvent themselves from many different levels, but certainly from an employee experience level, because I think it's going to be really, really interesting. It's quite scary to be part of it, but it's interesting to be going to be observing it as well. I'm sure you feel the same.
Absolutely.
So Ryan, just to wrap things up, I normally sort of ask the question to my interviewees, something we didn't know about you. And I know you, I've met you, you know, a couple of occasions, and you know, you've been very I've been very grateful for, you know, you've done talks for networking groups I've belonged to, but I don't know much about you as a person. So tell me something that would surprise me about Ryan, you know, some sort of secret that you can share on air with our listeners and with me that I didn't know about you as a human being.
Oh, of all the questions you've asked me, that's probably the one, the one that put me on the spot the most. Well, I think if people, I used to always think that the shaved hair, which I no longer have, but the shaved hair, which I had for so long, used to really throw people when I told them that I used to do a lot of horse riding when I was younger, right up until teenage years. I used to absolutely love riding horses, fascinated with dressage and show jumping and things like that.
Oh, so right.
That's usually one which surprises people. But other than that, you know, I've got two young boys, 7 and 8. So the majority of time I'm spending trying to persuade them to play kind of old school Super Mario games with me and things
fantastic.
Like that. So I guess they're the only things I could offer off the top of my head.
They're pretty impressive.
I'm a Man United fan as well, which sometimes surprises people given that I'm from the Northeast. They think I'm going to be a typical kind of Geordie Newcastle fan, but very far away from that.
Okay. Well, no, you've been very well. You've given us three, mate. You've given us three sort of secrets there, which is fantastic. Ryan, how can we find out more about you? How have people listening to this episode find out more about you and the fantastic work that you're doing at Hive? How can we engage with you? What's a good way for people to reach out to you?
LinkedIn, Twitter would be the normal. So just Ryan Tamasebi on Twitter or LinkedIn be an easy way of finding me. Like I said, if I was to summarize everything I've said in this podcast into one bit of advice, it would be, you know, none of us know what the future holds and none of us know exactly what the right path is to guide our businesses forward. So ask your people, involve them, get their thoughts, get their ideas. Let's get through this and pull through this together. And if anyone wants to hear more about how we're approaching that at Hive or with our customers, or they generally just want to chew the fat and bounce some ideas around, just reach out to me on social media and it'd be great to connect with some new people or existing people in the network to continue these conversations. But thank you very much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
That's brilliant. No, thank you, Ryan. I'll put those links in the show notes, and I definitely recommend that people reach out to you because it's a great organization. You're a great, great, great guy, and I always really enjoy interacting with you and your colleagues. So thank you very much, Ryan, and take care.
Cheers. You too, mate.
So thank you very much for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. We hope you found this episode useful and interesting. We'd love to get your thoughts about the show and any questions you have or ideas for topics that you'd like to maybe cover in future episodes. You can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form at engagingic.com. You can also sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, future episodes, and we'll also let you know about anything interesting we found out about internal communications and employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And you can also subscribe via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you like the show, we'd be really grateful if you could leave us a review. And if you know anyone else who might be interested in the show or might benefit from it, please let them know. Please share it with them and share them the links to the show and engagingic.com. Thank you very much.